broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the network refuses to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for August 31st in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced that the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. A quick recap of Saturday's show, 2 hours long, 6 days a week. That's Liberty Roundtable Live on the Sabbath. We rest. However, it was Sam Bushman and Sheriff Richard Mack breaking it down just for you. We talked about protesters staged outside of the White House Thursday night, the last night of the Republican National Convention. They placed an effigy of President Donald Trump under a mock guillotine. I don't know why this stuff's allowed in America, folks. You have your First Amendment right to peacefully assemble, not to set up mock effigies with guillotines. Wow. Rand Paul said that he was attacked by an angry mob near the White House, asking the FBI to investigate the mob, which he believes was trying to kill him. Yeah, he said the mobs would have killed us if it wasn't for the police. And this is crazy town, folks. This is right outside near the White House. Senator Paul's wife, Kelly, was with him. Kelly Paul recalls attacks by, quote, bloodthirsty mob. Most terrifying moment of her life. American freedom is going and never coming back, writes Joel Skousen, worldaffairsbrief.com, in a very scary article. Says they're using two primary things against us. One, the COVID, and two, riots and pillaging and plundering everywhere. Between the two, freedom is going and never coming back. I pray he's wrong, but predict he's right. Pandemic mandates push for, quote, global changes. Yes, indeed, that's for sure. Unmasking Obama, we talked about. Barack Obama, there's a new book out about him called Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency, written by journalist and best-selling author Jack Coghill. They say it's the biographical, he adds a new work to the biographical Obama collection. So more about Barack. But the bottom line is Barack promised an army back in 2008. Boy, howdy, do we have it now, don't we? Scary stuff, folks, I'll tell you that. Second hour, we talked about Portland protesters staged a sit-in at the mayor's home after he and Trump trade barbs. So the mayor praising the protesters, and then they end up rioting at his house. I guess it was a condominium, and they rioted outside. They don't even know if the mayor was home or not. But what a shame, disgrace, folks. How do we handle the pandemic and continued riots in the streets? What are we to do, folks? We talked about that in detail. I gave my breakdown. Second hour, Saturday, lovingliberty.net. Check it out if you want to learn about it. We talked about a church update as well from Matt Staver and crew. We shall prevail. Liberty Council represents pastors and churches and five separate federal lawsuits. Matt Staver doing a great job defending the freedom of religion. He basically highlights, since the unconstitutional church shutdowns began, Liberty Council is now representing, listen to this, over 2,000 pastors in over 44 states across the nation, doing a great job. We ask, are you overlooking the importance of prayer? American Family Association. Anyway, great 2 hours with the good Sheriff Richard Mack on Saturday. Lovingliberty.net, spread the word. Without further ado, news that I was refused to use starts now. Kurt Cosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. We're talking about Ron Paul. Kurt, he turned 85, buddy. Did you see that?
No, I didn't, Sam.
I'm celebrating Ron Paul's
birthday. Once again, out of touch. I mean, I know I should have picked up on
that.
You're
too busy
sleeping
through
movies.
Mainstream
media, of course, put it up big time.
Oh, good point. It was on Google. You know how Google does one of those days whenever you go up, it's like a special day, that it's like
right.
Google the Ron Paul. Fantastic
yeah,
news.
Right.
not? Mm-hmm. Don't we wish? Anyway, what a patriot. What a birthday. Lowell Nelson with us, campaignforliberty.org. Did you celebrate Ron's birthday?
Well, I certainly did. I wrote him an electronic happy birthday card, you know, electronically. That's how I celebrated it.
All right. I don't know that Ron Paul can handle the electronic birthday cards, but there you go. He's 85 years old. What a patriot. What an example. One in the very few in American history that has influenced for good many, 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 many things in Congress for a long time, running for president several times. His influence is great. And then kicking off in his later years, campaignforliberty.org, Lowell.
Well, it was a pretty awesome rally for the Republic back there in Minneapolis, as you might recall, in 2008. He held his own rally because he worried that his supporters would go crash the party in St. Paul for the Republican National Committee. So he held his own big shindig there in Minneapolis at the Target Center, and he drew more people to his deal than the RNC did to theirs. So just saying, it was awesome. I got to go there. In fact, my family drove there overnight. We drove 24 hours straight, you know, just pulling a little pop-up tent trailer, and we parked in a KOA campground right over there, and we had to drive 24 hours straight, you know, alternating between drivers because I wanted to get there on time and didn't have a lot of time to get there. But, yeah, 24 hours later, I just rolled out to the Target Center and had two or three days of just awesome speeches, people like Tucker Carlson, Tom Woods, and, you know, Jesse Ventura and John Tate, Gary Johnson, Barry Goldwater Jr., just to name a few, were the speakers there, and of course singing by Amy Allen and country singer Sarah Evans, famous for Suds in the Bucket, was there and singing. You know, they had usually a song in between every speaker, and then a film, like a video and a song in between every speaker. So it was really a high energy event and just a great tribute to the great Dr. Ron Paul, the great doctor who will free you now, Sam. It was a great event.
Yeah, and that was a long time ago, that event, right?
Oh, yeah, 2008.
In political years, that's forever too, buddy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, things have changed significantly since then. Did you know, by the way, about Sarah Evans, the famous country singer, Suds in the Bucket singer? She, instead of hiring, you know, some other professional singer to join her band, you know, to help sing harmonies and stuff, she asked her own sister to join her band. In other words, you know, Sarah Evans is not one of these gals that's really big and arrogant you know, turning her nose up at her own family, but she included her own family in her success and just toured the country, you know, with her own family, her own sisters, and singing up a storm. Great, great example there in country singing, country music. So, yeah, I just thought it'd be worthwhile noting Ron Paul's birthday because he has probably done more for the cause of liberty in our lifetime than any other person, just by the the causes he has supported and the great example he was in Congress. My question to you guys is, what do you think is the most significant idea or the most significant contribution that he has made in the cause of liberty? You know, you guys will have your ideas. I think the biggest one, in my opinion, of course, is push to end the Fed, to audit the Fed and then end the Fed. I think it's
all right.
One...
we'll talk about that. What do you think, Kurt?
Well, that's what first came to my mind in the Fed. But, you know, to me, it's just kind of tough to put just one thing there. But I do believe that that's very high, if not the highest on the list. You know, Ron Paul, a great example of somebody who, you know, he knew how to play the political game. He knew, you know, that it was, you had to do it. You had to, you know, play in part of the, you know, I guess you could say in the two-ring circus, you know, a Democrat or Republican. And yet, you know, he's also dabbled in the other parties, you know, including the Libertarian. You know, he's pointed out many, many times the failures of the party system. And, you know, I loved his little... bumper sticker on his desk, don't steal, the government hates competition, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's just a great, I mean, when I think of a great patriot then I, in our days, then I'd say he's there.
Yeah, I would agree that the Federal Reserve is probably the top item. Not only talking about it, not only putting together the end the Fed and eventually the abolish the Fed movement in modern times. I think that his willingness to run for president, you know, a lot of times we forget what running for an office means. You do it for two reasons, in my opinion. One is to get elected, obviously. But the second, and I believe in many cases, just as important, if not more important, oftentimes reason, is to educate all along the campaign trail. You really get the word out. You get more coverage during that time. Ron Paul really was an education man in Congress, voting for the right thing consistently over and over and over and over. And every time he'd vote a certain way on a bill, people would want to find out why. And then they'd study the behind-the-scenes understanding that Ron brought to the table. And so I think his educational campaigns along the way, not only serving in Congress, but his education campaigns along the way, including then taking the Federal Reserve discussion straight to the campaign stage, the debate stage, everybody was forced to focus on the fraudulent Federal Reserve. You could say it was a splash in the pan, but who else has got that done would be my comment. But one more thing Ron has done that I think is the most significant. He's been one of the most anti-war, especially anti-justified or anti-just war people. He's been the most peaceful presidential candidate in my lifetime, and he was consistent the whole... We'll finish talking about that in a second. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
All right, so I believe one of the keys to Ron Paul's success, one of the most important things he's contributed to our society, is his long-held anti-war stance. He is for defending America. In fact, Ron Paul was the only one on the campaign stage that said, hey, the only benefit to a race to space program would be for national defense. Okay, so he was a strong supporter of national defense and taking care of America and protecting the people. He understood that was a proper role of constitutional government. But he was against foreign wars. He was against foreign aid. He was against foreign meddling in the affairs of other nations. And he was a very peaceful candidate. And congressman throughout his decades, and he still is to this day. And I bring that up as one of his greatest accomplishments in contrast with those in current power in many ways. Lowell?
Yeah, well, you got that right, Sam. Not only did he have that policy, but he founded the Ron Paul Institute, .org, RonPaulInstitute.org, which is a treasure trove of articles and information, numerous different authors describing the foreign policy involvement, U.S. foreign policy, and, you know, what's wrong with it and why it's wrong, and it talks about, you know, occasionally there are several good things that happen, and, of course, it'll mention those, too. So RonPaulInstitute.org, he continues to run a podcast every day, every weekday of the week called Ron Paul Liberty Report. So even though he has retired from Congress, he has not retired from the cause of liberty. Truly a stellar example of what we ought to be doing in our lives every day, striking a blow for in the cause of liberty, Sam.
All right, there you have it. Pompeo is one of the people, in contrast, I'm kind of talking about, Lowell.
Yes, he is our Secretary of State for the U.S. right now, and it has been a while since we discussed U.S. foreign policy. But Ron Paul posted this article at campaignforliberty.org last Monday. In his post, he rightly praises one of Obama's few foreign policy successes, the Iran nuclear deal that would see a reduction of sanctions on Iran in exchange for a series of Iranian moves demonstrating its abandonment of a nuclear weapon. You know, nobody liked this. Nobody in the press liked this deal when Obama did it. But, you know, all of the good guys, Ron Paul and Scott Horton and others, recognized this this policy as a great step forward. But the neocons, they didn't like the deal because, of course, they're itching for a conflict with Iran. Trade between Europe and Iran was increasing. There was no evidence that Iran was reneging on its obligations. And even American companies were looking to Iran for business opportunities. And here Ron repeats another priceless concept. He says, quote, whenever goods flow between nations, war becomes less likely, end of quote. Jason Stapleton says it this way, where goods cross borders, armies do not. So that's a key concept for U.S. foreign, well, anybody's foreign policy. Really, if you want to avoid war, then you encourage trade. Well, unfortunately for Iran and for the U.S., Trump pulled out the U.S. out of the deal in 2018, saying that the Iranians have not knuckled down under the weight of Pompeo's pressure and putting regime change specialists like Elliot Abrams in charge of Iran policy has just moved us closer to an unnecessary war. I was quoting Ron Paul there. So Iran's not a threat to the U.S., no matter what the neocons say about it. Sam, they say it often that Iran is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, right? That's what they say. Well, yeah, I beg to differ, and I think Ron Paul begs to differ, because the U.S. regime is most likely the biggest exporter of terrorism in the world, approaching nearly 200 regime change operations in just the last seven decades. Well, back to Ron's column, he says, these past 2 weeks, the weakness in the U.S. maximum pressure policy toward Iran has been exposed for the world to see. First, Pompeo spent the summer lobbying European nations to support a U.S. motion in the U.N. Security Council to extend an arms embargo against Iran. As Iran has been judged in compliance with the Iran deal, the arms embargo is scheduled to be lifted in October. That's just a month and a half away. Well, Pompeo's diplomatic skills did not produce the desired results. Not a single party to the Iran nuclear deal voted with the U.S. to extend the embargo. So what did the Trump administration do? Well, they determined to trigger the snapback sanctions on Iran, which means if Iran is judged to be in violation of the Iran nuclear deal, all the previous sanctions would snap back into place. Ron Paul says, but there's a problem with this because the U.S. has formally withdrawn from the Iran agreement. It has no legal standing to trigger the snapback sanctions on Iran. He says, Ron writes, he says, if you take your marbles and go home, you don't get to still dictate the rules of the game.
And this is what's interesting. Who wrote this?
Ron Paul.
Oh, yeah, the guy that wants peace, huh?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Ron. You're right as rain on multiple topics. But this is an example where Pompeo's Iran failure undermines Trump's less war stance. He needs a guy like Ron Paul there to give him guidance.
Boy, I'll say, wouldn't that be awesome if Trump would have appointed Ron Paul to be his security, foreign security advisor.
Amen that, to that.
You know, I've often thought it would be fun to have a show. We were just talking about, you know, if you were president for a day, who would you hire? Who would you ask to be in your cabinet? For what reasons? Who would you, you know, yeah, it would be a fun show to talk about all the good
guys. Yes, it would. We'll have to pull a two-hour bonanza on that one because it'll take a while. Philip Giraldi writes an article that kind of dovetails with this very nicely. U.S. foreign policy, and this is what Ron Paul has said forever, it is the root cause of many evils. And sadly, this is true. We should be the beacon on a hill of peace, but yet oftentimes we're too hawkish for our own good, backed by the military-industrial complex, Lowell.
That's right. We have been so fixated on the coronavirus, we haven't really realized what is happening over in the Middle East. So Giraldi writes basically that both parties are continuing their deference to Israel, which really means hostility towards Iran, because see, Israel is you know, the regime in Israel is definitely opposed to the regime in Iran. Not the people. We're not talking about the Israeli people or the Iranian people. Those are wonderful, for the most part, 95% of the people, great people, right? The country, people of the country are good. It's the regime, the government regime in both, that is making life difficult for the people. Anyway, Giraldi writes that the U.S. media has not reported the almost daily bombing, Sam, the almost daily bombings of Syria and Gaza by Israel, and even largely failed to cover how 2 weeks ago the United States Navy seized 4 Greek-flagged oil tankers transporting more than 1 million gallons of fuel to Venezuela, a country which is in its bad condition due to sanctions and other maximum pressure at the hands of Washington, D.C. The fuel was seized based on unilaterally imposed U.S. sanctions on Iranian sale or export of its own petroleum product, a move intended to strangle the Iranian economy and bring about an uprising of the Iranian people. Boy, where have we heard that before?
And the only reason I think we would do this is the military-industrial complex itching for it, war hawks itching for it. Pompeo may not really be an understanding of what's going on. That's why he'd be kind of duped into, you know, some of this. But really, this has been a theme, whether it's Republican or Democrat leadership over the years. It almost doesn't matter who. Behind the scenes, the military generals and the advisors and people surrounding the president and others have really been hawkish forever. Even when they run on a peaceful platform, they go hawkish before they go home. Sad to say, and U.S. foreign policy has become the problem. And I think Ron Paul is the only one with the guts to challenge that foreign policy day in and day out for decades. And now I'm really glad that Philip Giraldi and others are writing articles about this. But this is something that Lou Rockwell and others have really focused on. Anti-war, what's that guy's name? He does a talk show.
Scott Horton.
Scott Horton doing a phenomenal job about this. There's a few of us. I try to be one of them too, but there's not enough of us to change the policy, and the policy is really the problem. And sadly, whether it doesn't matter almost who is at the helm of the ship continues to have a hawkish mind of its own, Lowell.
Unfortunately, that's entirely true. And this particular seizure of oil by the United States, I mean, this is done by pirates. We used to call this piracy. But this seizure of these 4 oil tankers, it hurts not only Iran, but it hurts Venezuela, which is the intended recipient of this oil. Venezuela, right? And so why is the U.S. upset, and why do they kill two birds with one stone with this single seizure of oil? It's because Iran and Venezuela both are members of OPEC. And OPEC countries are threatening to sell their oil in a currency other than the U.S. dollar. So this one move, this seizure is U.S. continuing effort to protect the petrodollar.
And that's why the Federal Reserve jettisoning fake money is number one, and that's why the peaceful idea, a change in foreign policy to a peaceful, humble foreign policy, is number two. Lowell Nelson in seconds, campaignforliberty.org. You are listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You- USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Louisiana's raised its death toll from Hurricane Laura as the State Department of Health says two more deaths were attributed to last week's storm, bringing the total in the state to 14. One of them was a 57-year-old man who died from a head injury after falling off a roof. The other died from carbon monoxide poisoning. And Governor John Bel Edwards says power outages because of the storm still total over 360,000, affecting many more people than that.
And that doesn't mean there are 368,000 people without power. There are more than that. That means there's 368,000 service locations without power.
One of two St. Louis police officers shot on Saturday's died. He was shot in the head Saturday while responding to a shooting, the other officer sustaining a non-life-threatening injury. A suspect's in custody. And this is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Douglas Kratt, veterinarian and president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Many states across the country have recently legalized marijuana for medical or recreational use. Veterinarians have seen a spike in poisoning in pets. Marijuana affects pets much differently than it affects people. THC, the main ingredient of marijuana, can make our pets scared or very sick. If you have marijuana or edibles in the house, please keep them out of reach. And when walking with your pets, make sure they don't pick up anything you don't expect. Concerned your pet has gotten into pot? If they appear off balance, rigid, nervous, or if they're drooling or dribbling urine, vocalizing, having seizures, please get them to the veterinarian immediately. There's no antidote for marijuana, but a veterinarian can provide supportive care until it passes. For more information on keeping your pets happy, healthy, and safe, visit avma.org. That's avma.org.
Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers is asking President Trump not to visit Kenosha, as he plans to do tomorrow after unrest over the shooting of Jacob Blake by police last weekend. Evers, a Democrat, says in a letter to the president that his presence will hinder the healing that needs to happen. And the chairwoman of the Congressional Black Caucus says she agrees with Evers.
His visit has one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to agitate things and to make things worse.
That's California Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass speaking on CNN's State of the Union. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden will be stepping onto the campaign trail for the first major speech after the Democratic convention. He's set to speak in the Pittsburgh area later today. A campaign official says Biden's going to lay out what his camp calls a different vision for the future. Find us online at usaradio.com.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, Ron Paul doing a phenomenal job. Happy birthday to him. I think one of the third and most important things that we can do is listen to Dr. Ron Paul and his son, Dr. Rand Paul, and realize that this pandemic is nothing but a sham. All right, they've spoke out about that quite boldly to their credit as well, but now we're learning more and more and more from more experts every single day. Lockdowns and mask mandates, or mask mandates, both, don't reduce COVID transmission rates or deaths, writes Stephen Miller. Lol.
In an article posted there at ronpaulinstitute.org last Wednesday, he discussed a new National Bureau of Economic Research, or NBER, working paper focused on countries in U.S. states with more than 1,000 COVID deaths as of late July. The study included 25 U.S. states and 23 countries, and based on their analysis are the following four facts. Number one, once a region reaches 25 total COVID deaths, then within a month, the growth rate in deaths per day falls to approximately zero. In other words, no matter the country, no matter the state, no matter its policies or politics, the number of deaths per day stops increasing within 20 to 30 days of passing a threshold of 25 deaths. That is fascinating datum right there. Number two, once that happens, deaths per day either begins to fall or the trend remains flat. Number three, the conclusion was the variability in death trends across regions has fallen sharply since the beginning of the epidemic and remains low. All states studied, all countries studied, have become more similar in their trends and have remained so. And now here's the clincher, the fourth observation, the fourth fact, I guess. Observations 1 through 3 suggest that the effective reproduction number R, everybody talks about this R, and that's what they're talking about. The effective R has hovered around one worldwide after the first 30 days of the epidemic. So the paper's conclusion is that the data trends observed above likely indicate that non-pharmaceutical interventions, or NPIs, they call it, non-pharmaceutical interventions, such as lockdowns, closures, travel restrictions, stay-home orders, event bans, quarantine, curfews, and mask mandates, do not seem to affect virus transmission rates overall.
Why? And you want me to add more proof to this reality? The CDC just released a bombshell, lol. CDC now says 94% of COVID deaths have an underlying condition. Only 6% were COVID alone. Jack Davis, Western Journal, with the details. Now, this is huge because you got to look at this and go, okay, wait a minute. How many people die of it? So 98% of the people that get it don't even die or don't even go to the hospital. 99%+ don't even die. But then you figure out 94% of those people who die have underlying conditions. So now what we're talking about is the elderly and very special circumstance people. Okay, it's doubled down in this point made by Stephen Miller. Lockdowns and mask mandates do not reduce COVID rates and or deaths. Now the CDC says, hey, 94% of the COVID deaths had an underlying condition. Only 6% even die. So that's 6% of this percent that gets it and the percent that dies. I mean, when you get down to it, it's so minuscule. It is shocking. And they're ready to create this year's economic destruction over it due to the state's, quote, coronavirus response. It'll pale in comparison to what's coming, writes Gary Barnett. Now, before we get to the economic piece, you were mentioning why?
Yes, because...
And I think this is important to the CDC's point, sir.
Yes, thank you. Because these policies have varied in their timing and implementation across countries and states, but the trends and outcomes do not vary. So that's the whole point of the study, right? It runs counter to previous studies claiming the NPIs were effective in reducing transmission rates. But governments have conducted an unprecedented social, economic, and political experiment in controlling whole populations' behavior with high economic and human costs. The authors asked the right question. The authors of this study, he's saying, Steve Miller writes this. He says, has this experiment in government-managed virus control and suppression made a difference? The startling answer they found after examining data from around the country and around the world is that the evidence simply is not there. If we're concerned about evidence on this global experiment, we must concede that the most government authorities have likely acted in error. That's the startling conclusion of this study, Sam.
Well,
not startling to you and me, but...
Yeah, and there you go. And what's interesting is they've destroyed the whole economy over it. Now, they say that the COVID, you know, caused economic turmoil. And the COVID didn't cause anything like that. The government response and shutdown caused it. If you don't believe me, ask Sweden. And the reality is, folks, we have shut down our whole economy. But sadly, you ain't seen nothing yet, lol.
Sadly, that's probably true. Now, Gary Barnett is speculating here. He's speculating about the upcoming wave of coronavirus that's going to be far worse than what we've experienced so far. He calls the pandemic what it is. I'm paraphrasing most of his column here. It's a fraud. It's a hoax. But most people have bought into it. People have surrendered to the hype to such an extent as to allow the destruction of their natural immune systems, in many cases their livelihoods. He notes the constant increase in money supply over the past decade, the explosive infusion of cash this year alone. He notes price inflation, unemployment, lockdowns, business closures, and so forth. But he says, quote, this is just the beginning. He says the destruction of the economy is a necessary aspect of the plan to advance global governance. The more people out of work and dependent on government means they'll be much easier to control. Already, mass poverty is evident, with food supplies dwindling and so many unable to support their families, starvation among a large part of the population is certainly possible, if not probable. You know, and I don't know, call it the mind stamp, what happened in Ukraine in 1930s, right? Holodomor, the people there were starved to death, over 5 million people.
Let's be clear, intentionally starved to death, sir.
Yeah, yes, intentionally. So this worries me. I mean, this sobering writing, he says this economic collapse coming was imminent, but now is being pushed forward at great speed in order to use this virus scare as the scapegoat for the desired economic reset. The biggest threat we face now is the coming fall and winter, as this flu season will most likely be much worse than normal due to the purposeful weakening of the immune system of most Americans.
By our ignorant responses to the, quote, COVID. Now, he says with more lockdowns, with more quarantines, with more isolation and more destruction of the economy, unemployment will balloon to unheard of levels, causing more sickness, death, and tyranny. And this is the salient point, in my opinion, at the hands of the state, Lowell.
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. Very sobering column, but it's a call to wake up, you know, for us to hear this. We need to wake up our neighbors, our friends, help them understand that we need to be prepared for anything this coming fall and winter. Who knows how long food supplies will last? Who knows how long bread will stay in the shelves of grocery stores, you know, come this winter? And we simply need to be prepared. Adequate food, adequate water, adequate housing, clothing, and other supplies, because we do not know what the government has in mind for us this coming winter. Sam?
And Paul Craig Roberts writes an article and talks about, hey, medical authorities continue to block effective COVID treatments.
Well, and he says that, number one, there is a conflict of interest between the clinical trials of drugs and the pharmaceutical industry that funds the trial. Two-thirds, notice this is a huge number, Sam, two-thirds of the FDA's budget comes from the industry that the FDA regulates. In other words, the regulator is financed by the entity it is supposed to regulate. Well, yeah, that's the foul right there. And the second point that Paul Craig Roberts makes is that remdesivir costs over $3,000 per patient, while hydroxychloroquine costs only a couple of dollars. There is a conspiracy, Sam, between U.S. public health agencies, the medical profession, the big pharma, to sideline hydroxychloroquine in order that to clear remdesivir for use. That's what they're doing.
They're doing it intentionally. The FDA in bed with them on this. It's a dishonest. There's a lot of doctors standing up trying to tell the truth, but they're getting shut down at every turn. Trump, sadly, is not taking up their cause like he ought to. Kurt would normally say, other than that, it's not so bad, except for this. Here come the COVID detention centers there, Lowell.
Well, those detention centers, Sam, are mentioned right now, right here, Liberty Roundtable, because in last year, Bill A-99 in the state of New York allows the state to take an individual suspected of being infected or contaminated to a detention center and there compel him or her to receive medical treatment and deemed necessary, including forced vaccination.
Where's the pro-choice crowd when you need them, huh? Quick pause.
Yeah.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
transport back in time to our nation's founding at the Freedom's Light Festival. Visit with freedom fighters, colonial artisans, music, contests, prizes, over 35 activities for the whole family. Schedule a school field trip and fulfill the federal requirement to teach the Constitution. Can you crack the spy codes used to win the Revolutionary War? Take home a founding document printed on the exact replica Isaiah Thomas used for the first Declaration of Independence. Register and compete in the Constitution Bowl. Join us September 17th through the 19th. Register at freedomslight.us. Freedomslight.us. This event is completely free, now more than ever. We need to ensure Freedom's Light is not extinguished. Let's keep this light shining in the hearts and minds of our children. Freedomslight.us. That's freedomslight.us.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, doing a great job on your radio, riding shotgun today. With more lockdown, more quarantine, more isolation, you can expect more trouble. Unemployment will balloon and get out of control. I pray it doesn't, but predict it will. Here come the COVID detention centers, though. So if you don't have a job, you can always go to a detention center for three squares a day, can't you, Lowell?
That's the plan, man. Get you re-educated, Sam. Teach you that you need to do what the government says. Boy, that's the purpose of these centers.
Yeah, get you to quit raging against the machine, huh?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, they're going to inject you. They'll give you a vaccine that will turn your brain around, man.
But Dateline New York is where this is coming out of. It's kind of a hint of what's to come across the country, you might say.
Yeah, and there's two other states seriously considering this already. One is Virginia, one is New Jersey, so the left coast over there on the eastern seaboard is leading the way on this issue. We need to make sure it doesn't pass in our legislatures. And I mention this because we need to be talking to our legislators. So if no matter where you are, no matter what state is your state, be talking to your legislatures. You know, they're gearing up for the legislative session in 2021. And they need to know that you do not want mandatory vaccinations to become law in your state, or that they condition a driver's license on a certificate of vaccination, as is done in Argentina right now. That started in 2018, folks. Argentina started delivering, issuing driver's licenses on condition that you can prove that you've been vaccinated, received all the scheduled vaccinations, and there will come a day, probably in a state near you, where you won't be able to get a driver's license, you won't be able to use public transportation, planes, trains, and buses, unless you have a certificate of vaccination. And see, these legislators, they're going to bank on the fact that they're going to be able to vote no against mandatory vaccinations, but behind your back, they're going to vote yes on these driver's license conditions, right? And so you need to be aware of that and tell them not to make conditional on vaccination, Sam.
And sadly, Bill Gates seems to be at the helm of this massive vaccine push. Donald Trump doesn't seem to be opposing it too much. I wish he would oppose it on the campaign trail. Him and Ron Paul were asked about a lot of these different discussions. Or I should say Rand Paul in this case. Him and Rand Paul on the campaign stage, running for president, both of them. They were asked about vaccines, and they were both against forced vaccinations. Will Donald Trump hold true to his trail rhetoric, Lowell?
Well, good question. I sure hope he does, Sam. But the article I read, I wanted to bring out this one particular meme. You know, it's a picture of Bill Gates, and what it says is this. It says, the same guy who says we need to depopulate suddenly wants to save everyone with his vaccine. You think there might be something sinister about the vaccines he wants to unleash on the populations of the world, Sam? You think?
Wow, I don't know how to respond to this. You want to respond, Kurt?
Well, I don't know what you guys are all worried about. Bill Gates is like one of the, this is just like, the modern day return of... all that's good. I mean, you know, he brought us Microsoft and all those things, and then he goes about doing, well, in my opinion, havoc with all that money, doesn't he?
He wants to save the world, Kurt, by killing, you know.
Well, he wants to just run around and tell everybody we got to have population control. We got to absolutely reduce the number of the people on the planet for the good of the planet and the good of everybody else involved. I think we start with Bill, but that's another topic. Here's the interesting thing, though. This guy wants to save everyone with vaccines. Why would he want to save everyone if he wants population reduction? I don't understand it, Lol. How dumb am I?
Well, and that's why this meme is so funny. I mean, it's funny because there's so much truth in it, right? I mean, he wants to, he speaks happily and glowingly of the vaccines that were used in Africa and Kenya and Philippines and so forth because they successfully reduced the populations there. Well, the countries didn't like that. They kicked him out. And so you think that the vaccines that he wants to unleash here on the world, you think they're going to save people? Absolutely not. He talks about it. He talks a big talk, but the vaccines that are created are not going to save people, and they're going to cause worse problems than those people have right now. It is going to cause more depopulation. It is a tool of the adversary to reduce the number of lives living on this planet, and we just need to stop him in his tracks, Sam. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we got to stop him.
Well, I think so, and I think the way we do it is we have folks like Dr. Scott Atlas speak out boldly and say, wait a minute, you know what, we don't need this. There are better ways to go about the problem than panicking and melting down. We need Donald Trump and Rand Paul and others to stand up boldly and nobly and say, look, we are against forced vaccines then, and we're against them now. We need to fire Fauci, and we need to stand up for the truth, and then the American people need to get behind the truth and say, we won't tolerate forced vaccinations. I think if that happens, we're off to the races.
Yeah, I think so too. Like Del Bigtree and Robert Scott Bell and others have, and Joseph Mercola, you know, other great voices in this fight are teaching people that vaccines are not all they're cracked up to be. They often cause more problems than they solve. And if the people if we the people will understand this important principle, then, yeah, vaccines don't even have a chance of getting off the ground. So we need to educate our neighbors, our friends, and stand up against the vaccines. Obviously, it's a choice, yeah, and I agree that you are free to choose that if you want, but if people truly understood the dangers the vaccines presented, I think they'd be less inclined to go get them, especially give them to their children. Sam?
There you have it. This is a very serious, serious issue, folks. But there's a lot of serious issues going on in America. For example, have you heard of the 17-year-old kid that kind of shot folks? Well, the plot thickens on that story, Lol.
He lived outside of Chicago, but he went to Kenosha, Wisconsin, to defend property from rioters. And in fact, this is not uncommon in the Midwest, you know, where there have been property demolition by rioters. In many cases, the good guys have come armed and they've protected the properties of the, you know, downtown store owners and so forth. And so I think he was probably doing that very same thing. He went to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and so here's how this article opens. I just love the way this writer opens this article. He says, it's Harold Cameron, by the way, wrote this article. He says, for a few moments in the wee morning hours of Wednesday, August 26th of 2020, a 17-year-old kid from exurban Chicago carrying an unremarkable bargain bin rifle, no different from those owned by millions of Americans, proved more powerful than the combined might of the entire world order. Talk about an opening. But he goes on in the article to talk about how this young man, he was on the street 1 a.m. on the morning of August 26th, helping to defend businesses when his position was kind of overrun by the bad guys, by the Black Lives Matters, Antifa types of rioters, property damagers, and so swing at him, and you can see this on the videos, and all he could do, he was knocked to the ground, and the fellow with the skateboard was going to take him out, and so he had no choice but to shoot. He had this, like I said, this AR 15 or AR 17 or something with him, and he shot the fellow with a skateboard. Another fellow, almost a split second later, was coming forward, and he lifted his hand, and in it was a revolver. He was lifting it up to shoot this Kyle Rittenhouse, and so Kyle then shot him as well, and pretty much took out a bicep of his arm. And a third fellow tried to pound on him, and Kyle defended his life from him as well. So basically, two out of three died, but the three, you know, were not successful in killing Kyle. They would have beaten him either the life out of him or within an inch of his life had they been able to attack him when he was down on the ground. But fortunately, he was armed. Now, one could question whether it was wise for him to be there in the first place, but he was doing what he thought was the right thing to do, which was helping to defend the property of store owners in downtown Kenosha. And he was defending his life from the rioters and looters, the people who were trying to kill him. He just defended his life. Now, the sad irony, Sam, is that he is being accused of first-degree manslaughter, and the people who were rioting, who were attempting to take his life from him, or are not being charged, Sam. So that's kind of a thumbnail of sketch of.
All right, let me throw something else out. You probably don't know before the end of the hour. Do you know there was a second shooter there?
Let me throw something in real quick on the thing with Kyle. You know who Attorney Lynn Wood is?
Nope, sure don't.
Anyways, the attorney that did the Covington Catholic High School kid, Nick Sandman, he's stepping up and saying he's going to get the best legal representation for Kyle Rittenhouse that he can get. So
wonderful.
There's some good help.
What's his name again, Kurt?
His name is Lynn Wood, Attorney Lynn Wood. Okay. I'll send you the article.
Did you hear what I said about it, Kurt?
Go ahead. You said a second shooter.
That's correct. You know about this?
I heard the shot, Sam, but I don't know about him, no.
All right, so you know there was a second shooter?
Mm-hmm.
All right, because most people don't know there was a second shooter there. But it turns out...
You mean helping Kyle?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. I thought there were other shooters taking shots at Kyle, not that Kyle actually had backup.
New second shooter. Video changes everything in case of Kenosha teen accused of first-degree homicide. World Net Daily, Western Journal with a piece. They say game-changing video turns tables on accusers. I guess there was another gunman. So there you have it.
Well, that's encouraging. I read a number of articles there, Sam, and saw a video of that over and over just to try to study it. And I do not understand how a prosecutor would have the guts to prosecute Kyle Rittenhouse simply for defending his own life there. But, you know, prosecutors, some of them are in the hands of the bad guys.
All right. Well, sadly, we're going to have to drop low. We're out of time. We're going to add Dr. Scott Bradley. We are going to talk more about this shooting. Because it is interesting. Kurt's got a bunch of details. There's a World Net Daily and the Western Journal with more details. We'll break it all down for you. And again, I don't know all the details, but they say game-changing video shows second shooter. The prosecutors may have trouble with this one. And now you got this key attorney group standing up for Kyle. The only question is there any honesty left in the courts? The answer is we pray so. Hello?
That's right, Sam. Thank you to both of you, Kurt and Sam. You do such a wonderful job here.
All right, we'll come back and have Kurt extend the discussion points he just made. The teasers this hour, the details coming up. For Sam, Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, and Kurt Crosby, LocalHoneyMan.com, we declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic.